I'm Duncan MacLeod, and this is the Tech Central Show. TCS is brought to you by MTN Business. You can learn more about MTN Business by visiting mtnbusiness.co.za, and we thank them for partnering with the show to bring you these great interviews. Remember, you can subscribe to the Tech Central Show on YouTube at youtube.com/techcentral, or simply search Tech Central, one word, in your favorite podcasting app and hit the subscribe button and you'll get all of our latest shows. Now, my guest today on the Tech Central Show is Nomvuyiso Sobhatshi, who heads an industry nonprofit called the Association for Comms and Technology, or ACT ACT for short. Nomvuyiso, it's good to see you. It's been a while. Are you well?
Thank you very much, Duncan. I am well. Actually, lovely offices that you have. Your studio is quite beautiful.
Thank you
for having me.
Thank you. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome you to our studios. Now, ACT is a non-profit entity that represents six, is it, of South Africa's major telecommunications operators. Who are they?
So it's the six. It's Cell C, it's MTN, it's Rain, it's Liquid Intelligent, it's Vodacom and Telkom. It's those six.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And it was established around about 2 years ago, maybe a little bit longer than that now. Yes. You had a launch at Melrose Arch.
Correct.
Why was ACT founded?
ACT essentially was founded on two principles that in terms of the ICT ecosystem as it stands, we needed to ensure that every decision that is made in South Africa is made on research that is evidence-based from a policy point of view. And because for the last, at least this year, 21 years, since 2022, since 2003, there hasn't been a policy that is involved with empirical evidence-based research. So that was the main thing. Then secondly, was to ensure that the network operators and in and themselves, when it comes to issues of mutual interest, they speak with one voice so that they're not confusing stakeholders, such as, I'll say, regulators and policymakers, especially at the time that they were, five of my members were recently, at that year, were given spectrum by the South African government. So as they were about to roll out the spectrum, what does that mean in the main? But also, we had other challenges, such as uninterrupted power solutions that we had to look at. So it's a broad topical issues that we look at, from South African Revenue Services, National Treasury, DTIC, our communications and technology. So that's what we do.
So do you spend most of your time then speaking to regulators, to policymakers and the like?
Mostly,
in addition to your six members, of course.
Yes, mostly it's ensuring that the regulators and policymakers have the most up to date information when it comes to their decision making, and also try to demonstrate to them on items that they have not yet made decisions on. You for instance, if you think about it, like diesel rebate for the telecommunications sector that we applied for, we had to demonstrate that connectivity is a human right. It's a basic human right, the same as water, the same as electricity, that people cannot be without connectivity. Unfortunately, our application was not considered, but those are the kind of people that we speak to.
Okay. Now, you personally have extensive experience in the sector. You were an ICASA councillor, if I'm not mistaken, for about 8 or 9 years.
8 years.
Years.
Correct.
You also worked in the Department of Communications. I think it was just called the Department of Communications then.
Yes, correct.
And you were an advisor to the minister at one point as well.
Yes, I did a short stint as an advisor to the minister.
You were also an acting DG at one point,
yes, when we were doing the merger of the Department of Communications and the Telecommunications Department and creating the new Department of Communications and Digital Technologies, just to make sure that the merger of the two departments happens seamlessly, and if there are any excess people, especially administrative staff, we advise from government point of view what is supposed to happen when it comes to those positions.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. So you know your way around the system.
Yes. Been around.
So there's a lot happening in the industry right now. There's also a lot happening in politics. We have a new Minister of Communications, and if I'm not mistaken, Solly Malatsi is the first non-ANC communications minister that we've had since 1994. Have you had a chance to engage with him yet? And if so, what are your thoughts?
I say affirmative. It's the first minister since 1994 that is not ANC. I must say, I've had engagements with him, and the impression that I have of him is a very pragmatic man. He is not driven by political agendas. He is about the business at hand, and he's very, I'll say he's very welcoming in terms of new ideas. And he'll just say, give me a minute, I'll read up on what you've sent to me and apply my mind. Because he realizes that he is, has been established, that office has been established in terms of the law. And one of the things that impressed me about him in our engagement, it always involves the deputy minister. That was the minister.
Who was the minister, yes.
So, and I think it's more of a sanity check for him, and that I commend from on his part. Yes.
Okay.
But we will have a formal engagement with my board and him in the next, I think next month, August already.
Okay. Yeah. But it sounds like your initial contact has been positive and
very positive.
You are positive about this change.
I am very positive about this change. And as because I'm a person of that is non-partisan, that does not belong to any political party, it is very important for us as a sector to have a minister that understands the business of ICT, that understand how the ecosystem works. And of course, that is having an open door for us to engage with him, wherein we have challenges within the sector. So I must say, so far, well, a young, vibrant, quite very, very smart minister that we have received from this GNU process.
Okay, that sounds, sounds very positive. There's a lot on the minister's plate, and we're going to be talking about a lot of issues today that I think he's also going to have to deal with. And the first of those, which I want to spend some time talking with you about, is the switch off of 2G and 3G networks in South Africa. Telkom, of course, has done it already. They were one of the early ones, but they didn't have a lot of the legacy that Vodacom, MTN, and Cell C inherited. The previous minister, and possibly the minister before him as well, set deadlines for 2G and 3G switch off. I understand your take on this is that it's not necessary, that it should rather be left to the operators to determine when they should switch off these networks. Just take us through your thinking around this and what you think should actually happen.
All right. First of all, unlike, let's say, other countries that people will look at, in South Africa, we license spectrum on a technologically neutral basis, meaning that the 2G, 3G network spectrum that was assigned to network licensees has actually been refarmed in some instances for other purposes, especially those that have moved away from 3G.
Like Telkom.
Yes. So it's not like they return the spectrum to ICASA. They have refarmed it and use it like Telkom, to your point. Now, our issue is this. You don't have to set a deadline. There is no rush to set a deadline. And actually, there's not even a requirement in law otherwise. Allow the industry to run the process and report to ICASA as the regulator where they are in terms of trying to make sure that indeed that we don't have 2G legacy networks in place. However, there's a caveat why we are saying this should be led by industry. We are saying that there are a lot of systems in South Africa, machine to machine, that still rely on 2G, especially 2G networks. If you think of the likes of Transnet, for example, Transnet still has a lot of their infrastructure relying on 2G network from a machine to machine level. If you think of, then we go to, I say end users like myself and you, people who drive cars, the cars that still are still equipped with the 2G SIM cards and system for a tracking device. So that means the tracking industry might be affected as well. Then also to end users as well, there are a lot of people that cannot afford 4G handsets and are still, even here in Gauteng, are still relying on 2G handset just from an affordability point of view, because they just want to be contacted on the handset. They can't afford a device such as a 4G. And we're saying, before you move ahead with dates and all, let's sit around and develop a framework, government develop a framework. How will the transition happen? How does everyone see their transition happening? If you think about it, we used to have when cell phones first started, they were very expensive, mm-hmm. but now 2G is the cheapest handset. You can even get one for 150 rands. Wow. if not less. But a cheapest 4G handset starts just above 1,000 rands. If you think that of our unemployment rate, the people that rely on social grants, there's no ways that they can afford that. And the reality is that because cell phones do not belong to network operators, they belong to OEMs. The OEMs themselves, they know that the 4G handset is taxed as a luxury good in South Africa. Therefore, an ordinary person cannot necessarily afford a 4G handset. So we're saying, come back, let's talk about how to implement this.
Yes. So are 4G handsets, are the taxes applied to the smartphones different to the taxes that are applied to a 2G device, for example?
So 4G, so I'll make the example because I have an older phone. I think I have a 4G. You know that there are handsets that cost 30,000 and above.
Yes.
And you won't understand why is the person spending so much. That will be your 5G handset. Mm. We're not even talking about. So 4G and 5G, including their components in the South African context, beyond the VAT tax, beyond the, let's say, because most of the handsets are not manufactured in South Africa, beyond the import duties, there is a luxury tax that is imposed on it. And the luxury tax that is imposed is over and above the other taxes that we know of. Mm-hmm. That it's treated as, let's say, you know, people who buy luxury brands, mm-hmm. is treated as such because it's a 4G handset.
Right.
And I say, rethink that, government, because you want everyone to be connected. And remember, we're saying we don't even have like direct, interest in this regard, but we're saying consumers, in order for them to afford this phone, the first step, make it easy for them to buy the handset. Make it cheaper for them to buy. Because even if the phone is broken, the component is still far more expensive. So if your phone breaks down, let's say you have a handset, 4G handset, it breaks down, you go to a shop, you say, I would like to get it fixed. They will advise you straight up, rather buy a new one. Mm. Because the components are as expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what should... We zero rate basic goods like maize meal and mm-hmm. and I think fish and bread and that sort of thing from VAT.
Right.
We're talking here about import duties on handsets, which in your view should be done away with entirely. Should we even be imposing any taxes on something that is actually a fundamental building block of participation in the digital economy?
I'll say this because almost all handsets within our context, they attract some form of taxation.
Mm.
And especially those that are not, I'll say the entire manufacturing chain is not in South Africa. You'll recall that there was somebody that tried to manufacture, I think, in KwaZulu-Natal, at Dube Trade Port,
yes.
a 4G handset. But that person still needed to buy components outside of South Africa. So it's very difficult for any person. I know there's one in Midrand right now that is trying to do something similar, but they have the from the 2G up until a 5G handset. It's very difficult for any person to actually, because we don't have, we don't have a billion population like, let's say, India, China. Mm-hmm. It's difficult for anyone to make money from a handset in the South African context due to the taxation laws that we have. The other taxes, let's say import duties, and maybe we'll understand because those components are not from South Africa, but the part that is within our control, which is the luxury tax,
mm-hmm.
like really, it's not a luxury good having a handset.
Mm.
Can you make it easier for people to actually have access to a handset? That's what the point was saying there.
Yeah. And that'll then help people get off 2G and 3G devices and onto those 4G devices. But
correct.
In your view, should the minister be setting deadlines for 2G and 3G switch off at all? Or should it just be left entirely to the industry? Is there a role for the minister in this process?
I'll make this example. I don't think there is a role. And we know this from, I said, sometimes we don't learn lessons. We know this from digital migration, that the industry and South African consumers take their own time to let go of devices, right? People will still keep the old TV set. Somebody will still keep the phone up until it breaks and there's nothing that can be done. And we keep them for because we don't have a lot of disposable income. So to set a deadline, it's almost like the deadline is arbitrarily set. No one is looking at the impact of what will happen. So where we are as ACT, we're like, this is not a role of a minister. Certainly, but a regulator can be given guidelines to say, oversee this project, make sure that South Africans actually get are not using 2G handsets. Tell us how we can facilitate to make sure that more South Africans are using 4G. To the point that we're saying earlier around taxation, relaxation of tax in terms, and we're not even saying 5G handset. We're saying just 4G for now, because 5G is a total different ball game. Because when you're looking at a handset that is 30,000, I don't know how much will it be reduced to in order for it to be
affordable. It'll come down eventually.
Yes, it will come down. But when you're looking at that price, it's near impossible. But when you're looking at a price base of 1,500, at least you know you're talking about a smaller a smaller amount compared to the first. So we're just focusing on 4G for now, 4G handsets.
I know there were some noises. I don't know if anything was ever gazetted or any policies were or regulations were ever introduced, but there was some talk about banning the importation of 2G and 3G handsets so that people aren't still buying them. I believe that today you can walk into Pep stores or Ackermans or wherever and buy a 2G handset. Doesn't that make sense? Shouldn't there be a policy in place that says, sorry, we can't import these anymore? Probably coupled with the scrapping of import duties on 4G devices to bring the cost of those down.
Yes, that is the conversation we had in the previous administration with the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition. And we said this is one of the things that they must consider, that they must scrap it as they have done with the dumping of the older TV sets. However, they still, I'm sure they're doing their own internal processes. We still have to have engagements with the new administration. That is what we prefer, that indeed there shouldn't be any resale of 2G handsets. That's one. Also, from an ICASA point of view, we actually sent them a proposal as to how they must consider removing the 2G type approval certificate. Remember, the challenges also start with the type approval certificate, because that type approval certificate still sits on the numbering system of ICASA. So you can bring a 2G handset. Whereas if ICASA consults and say, this is the plan for South Africa, we want to move to 4G, we want to remove this 2G, 3G certificate, but your 2G, 3G a handset will still be supported in South Africa up until the product is like obsolete. But they also need to do that as a first point of call.
There's, of course, a new minister in DTIC as well. Have you had any engagements there?
Not yet. We haven't had any engagements with the minister at DTIC yet. It's one of the ministries that we are looking at engaging with. Also, as well, Minister of Finance from a taxation point of view. Because we had previously written to, Revenue Services. Someone always called it the old world, Revenue Services.
SARS. Receiver of Revenue.
So then.
When I grow up, I want my job title to be the Receiver of Revenue. Yes.
And then we advised there towards the end of the administration that, of the previous administration, look, we only implement as the receiver. We only implement the taxation. The person that we need to speak to is the policymaker, and then we can start the conversation. So, although the minister has come back and one deputy minister has come back, we're assuming that it's a new administration. So we'll have to restart the conversation once again.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So some of the network operators have suggested that 3G will be the first to go and that will actually keep 2G networks in South Africa. Do you concur with that view?
So 3G is still, I'll say, a lot of them, and we can see, there's even fewer handsets that are 3G that are in the market. I think they've proactively moved subscribers from 2G, no, from 3G, apologies. I think even ICASA's report last year actually even points to the fact that there's fewer connections for 3G, and actually 3G connections have remained, are actually reducing.
Okay.
So especially, I say, Vodacom and MTN, proactively, they are actually making sure that 3G is not there. Here lies the problem with 2G, right? 2G, especially in rural areas, think of the rural provinces. 2G is able to cover a larger area.
Because of the spectrum band it's using.
Because of the spectrum band it's using. And so it's very, and knowing that the type of end user you find in a rural area and is highly unlikely to change a handset to a 4G. And therefore, 2G will still remain for a long time. That's the first one. Secondly, for the reasons that I said earlier, especially for machine to machine, because this is a quite expensive machinery if you were to chat to Transnet and the guys that are doing tracking of cars, that means they have to recall a lot of cars as to what does this mean. So it will still be with us for a while, but there has to be that, I'll say, for new word that people are, there has to be a journey, a roadmap that takes us there as to how are we going to ensure that a 2G, especially from a connectivity, from a cell phone connectivity, is actually not longer in our system. How long will it take us there? We know what, how many years my digital migration took us. So how long, what are the building blocks are we putting in place in order for us to reach there? So that's the things that we, I'm saying, it's a, for me, it's a, because you have this machine to machine problem, it will be with us for a long time.
I've heard suggestions that what we may end up having is a very thin sliver of spectrum used for 2G to support these legacy applications, these embedded SIMs at Transnet and elsewhere in the security companies and logistics networks, etc., that just a few megahertz of spectrum be reserved for 2G and that the rest is then allocated to 4G and 5G. Do you think that's what we're going to end up seeing, this thin sliver that's going to be with us for decades to come?
I'm not sure the size, because we have the issue of rural connectivity that still needs to be taken care of. And if you are looking at from a, if the other building blocks are not there, let's say 4G handsets and everything, it might not be that thin, right? Might not be that thin. But if we're committed to ensuring that a lot more people are connected and have 2G, have 4G devices, then there is, then it will be very thin, just to support those services, because it's, when I looked, when we had the conversation with Transnet, I was like, okay, it looks like we'll have this for the next at least 20 years, because they've made huge investments. They've made, it's a huge investment to expect a person to change. And those were the people that were open with us to say, look, this is where we are. We and you know how much money government is putting to Transnet. Why would they fix something that works, right? And there's no, just no incentive for them to fix such, so for a system that is working for them.
Let's talk about some other issues now.
Okay.
The other things you have on your plate. One of them, touch wood, there's been no load shedding now for about 120 days.
Yes.
Not sure the exact number of days, but it's somewhere in that region. But there's always the possibility it's going to come back. It was a nightmare for the network operators when it was happening. Maybe just take us through the impact that load shedding has had on your members and how they've been dealing with it, and what some of the issues are that you've been discussing with the regulator and also the policymakers around this issue.
Okay. Perhaps let me start with your opening statement, the 100 and plus days of no load shedding. There is no load shedding, but there is load reduction.
Right.
And I'll make the very simple example. I stay in Pretoria, one of the affluent suburbs. I'm blessed enough to have a solar in my house. But there are people in my area that have been without electricity for the past 72 hours.
Wow.
Oh, yes. The counselor keeps sending WhatsApps and says how there's no ETA. He does not have ETA. Mm. People have been without electricity. So there is that load. So whilst it looks good, I say at a national level, there are pockets wherein load reduction is happening. And then there are pockets wherein infrastructure due to the load shedding that was happening before. So, for instance, the site that is closer, the substation closer to my house is called Mirage. It just drips, just for no reason. Mm. So there is that. So there is that, reduction and of quality in terms of the connection for electricity.
Mm. The municipal infrastructure.
Exactly. It has really, really diminished. And you know Tshwane is a big metro. It's not a small metro. And if it's happening in Tshwane, think what has happened in, is it Citrusdal with the storms. Mm. They've had massive power outages, as we call them these days, and there is an impact. So on load shedding, so in a manner, this is what has happened with load shedding. Since 2022, we've had, I think it started being the worst, July, August, September, it was the hardest load shedding. And there's not a single member that has not been affected by load shedding. And to this end, at that time, you may recall that there were promises of an 18-month plan. Eskom had this other plan, and people were forced to come up with alternatives. So the first one that has been very popular at that particular point in time was generators.
Mm-hmm.
And generators, as we know, it's not clean energy at all. And
it's expensive.
Very, very expensive. And with the cost then of buying a generator and cost of diesel, people had to look at other alternatives such as the IPP partnerships with some of the IPPs, then using their properties for solar power. And I must say, when we put the application to National Treasury for diesel, we saw a issue when we are looking at the financials. Say the listed members of ours take their listed information, look at their financials, you look at their CAPEX spend, and you're like, wow, there's problems here.
Mm-hmm.
This means money that was supposed to be utilized to roll out 5G services, is the commitment is being shifted to load shedding solutions. Load shedding, it was at a very, 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 very high pace. That for us was a great concern. And those were the conversations that we wrote to ICASA last year, March, and we told them and demonstrated that this is the challenge that we're faced with. Think about how small the six is. This is the amount that they're spending. And we had figures just to show collectively how much they were spending, and they're saying we are concerned that this may derail the agenda for purposes of 5G, and people are still paying for that spectrum that they are not building at the same pace that they were expected to. Can we have a consultation? Took ICASA a year to consult. And by the time they consulted when we were day 50 or 60 of the no load shedding. And I think everyone is missing the point that despite the fact that from a Eskom national level, which I call it like the rosy picture, the glossy picture, there is no load shedding. But
the reality on the ground is very different.
The reality on the ground is very, very different at municipality. City of Joburg, I even lost count. We haven't even received reports from our members how the crisis of City of Joburg when it comes to power has affected them, because it has been so frequent that when they tell us, it will be a point that we'll be like, this is where we are, this is how much we've managed to spend just to be able to keep up with the outages that have been experienced in the City of Joburg. And these are small cities. Joburg and Pretoria are very, yes, they might be big in terms of the people that live here, in terms of their income, but comparative to other I say cities, if you look at KZN, Durban, the impact there, we just spoke about CitrusDAL right now, it's at that level. It happens, and it's not happening once in a while. It's happening so often. So the impact of load shedding, not only on network operators, but on municipalities and on consumers, is felt. I'm sure if you are on social media, you see how many people complain. We don't have network. Network is never available. When you don't have electricity, there's no network. Mm. So the issue for us is that we believe that perhaps with the just energy plan, which won't be overnight, right? We believe that perhaps there will be a long-lasting solution. Mm. But I don't think regulators, especially those that are outside electricity that are dealing with network operators such as ICASA, should blindly accept what has been reported as the 110 days, 100 and whatever right. days of
that's not the reality of what's actually
they must
happening.
Actually, they can even go to their counterparts at NERSA and say, just tell us city by city what is going on. Mm-hmm. If let's say they have to do their own sanity check, just to check there as to what's happening at city of Cape Town, what is happening in city of Joburg, Tshwane, you name it. So that's what we're saying, that it is, the impact is felt by everyone at this particular point.
Just remind me about diesel. I don't know if it was ACT or it was another industry body or the operators directly. I forget the details, but there was a request that the diesel cost for the operators be reduced through the elimination of taxes. Just remind me what that was about, and has there been any response from the government to that request?
Oh, it's a very funny one. So it was ACT that did
it. It was ACT, yes.
Yes. So because the cost of diesel was just going so high, then we elected, okay, let us make an application to government to consider, like they've done in agriculture, in mining and food processing, that diesel for purposes of connectivity not be taxed for the, you know, there's the road accident fund component.
Yes.
Right. So the road accident fund component has different pricing in it. So we just wanted we wanted them to just remove the tax for about 6 cents
right.
per litre. And we had the engagements with National Treasury. They told us, look, your application is receiving attention, but we are not going to give you a formal response. We don't respond to anyone, but you must listen. Yes, I like your face. You must listen to the minister's budget vote speech. Should your sector not come out, that means you are not successful.
Wow.
Yes, it's quite shocking, right? Mm. So we write back to them. We're like, okay, say there was a defect in our application. How will we know? Can you please tell us what is defective in terms of our application? How can we improve? Because there's no point in putting an application year in, year out. Mm. And then you're still given like the same answer. Wait for the minister's budget vote. Save to say, we did not receive a response.
Good grief.
Yes, but I guess we did receive a response because the minister did not announce.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
And it's in writing. It's quite bizarre.
That is bizarre.
Yes.
That is bizarre. Okay. So will you write again?
We are thinking about it, especially now because we know that some of our members, we just want to check the data, how much they're spending on, because that year, in a period of 6 months, they'd spent in excess of just under 1.1 billion just in that period. And it was quite a lot. Mm. And if you're thinking that our members are not the same in terms of size, and one member did not even have a generator, we were only looking at five members. Mm. That's how bad it was in terms of
it almost seems like we often talk about policy conflicts in the telecom sector where, yes, you know, the government in effect sets a policy that affects Telkom, in which it owns a 40% whatever it is stake. The National Treasury is collecting taxes when there's load shedding from operators buying diesel. Is it in the National Treasury's interest to actually do what's in the interests of telecommunications operators and growing the economy when they're collecting taxes on the back of it? It raises some interesting questions, does it not?
It does, and I'll say why. For us, I actually said, because I looked at when the the budget vote was announced last year, and I said, and we didn't have, South Africa was not in a good financial state, then I was like, now I understand why our application was not really responded to. It's because of where we find ourselves as South Africa. And therefore, why when a person is, I say a person because they're looking at the sector holistically, is contributing so much towards the national revenue fund from the different taxes, if you think about it. USASA tax, annual license fees, spectrum fees, and then they have their own taxes, income tax that they're doing. Why would I give them a reprieve as a national treasurer? Obviously, this cow still has milk.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like that. That's how, because I was like, I see where it's going. However, if you're looking at it from a sustainability point of view, if you're looking at the financials of some of my members, especially the listed ones,
mm-hmm.
you can tell how badly load shedding has affected them. You can tell that, especially those that no longer enjoy group status, let's say they no longer have operations outside South Africa,
mm-hmm.
You'll see how they've done badly from a profitability point of view. And then I don't think they are looking at the sector from a how to sustain it. It's and if you are looking at it from an infrastructure, I say network industries, look at water, look at electricity, look at transport, look at telecoms. Who is still making some form of money in the South Africa? Because those are the four most active industries that are sustaining the economy, right? But these three, we know water has its challenges. We know electricity has major challenges. We know from transport what is going on there. And these are mostly state-run and state-owned. And this one is privately owned. Mm-hmm. So you are likely as a sector to go and attract investment outside. So it's not a priority. Mm-hmm. That's how, because even for the response, how it was written to, I thought, I've worked in government. I've never seen such a response. It was just bizarre to me. I was mm-hmm. like, wow. It took me back.
Mm.
Yeah.
So the network operators have spent billions reinforcing their networks against load shedding on batteries and other solutions, generators, diesel, et cetera, et cetera. But this has unfortunately brought all the criminals out as well. And the theft of particularly batteries and syndicates involved in this as well from base stations is obviously having a huge impact. How serious is the problem of crime for telecommunications operators? And are you satisfied with what's happening to address it?
I was going to say it's extremely, extremely serious. And it is so serious that a couple of weeks ago with two other industry associations, we had to, within the ICT sector, which is Comrec and Digital Council Africa,
mm-hmm.
we had to sign a memorandum of understanding as to how to deal with the issue of economic sabotage of critical infrastructure. Because we saw that whilst Comrec focuses mostly from a law enforcement point of view, making sure that law enforcement proactively has laws that are enforced from a magistrate to a police officer, how which form needs to be filled, how to put task force together. Also, then from our side, we make sure that by the time they go there, they have proper research, they are able to demonstrate that this is the impact of this sort of crime, because we had come from a history wherein this crime was not taken as seriously, but now it is being taken seriously. We're encouraged by areas such as, I think, Qabega, and even here in Sandton and Soweto, wherein there has been serious prosecution and people have been given hefty sentences in terms of the stealing of batteries, as selling of copper and related things, and just plain destruction of, listen to this, fiber.
Mm.
Just plain destruction of fiber. So So we are having we have that relationship that we have established, that it is that serious, that we know there are other crimes that are also critical, but we are saying wherein there is vandalism, wherein there is destruction of infrastructure, wherein there is theft, it means that community will be disconnected for a while. They will not even have access to emergency services. The police will not even know what is happening there. An ambulance is not even about just being economically active, just the most basic of things. The fact that network operators are required to connect schools, some of the schools will just be connected for the fun of it, but the infrastructure is not active because it has been stolen. So we have put together that MOU. Now we are putting together a proper program of action that will say over the things that we've identified, the research, the PR, the relationship with law enforcement agencies, what more can be done and how quickly it needs to be effected, because now we realize that there's a new administration. We have to talk to different people. We have to introduce ourselves to Minister Senzo Mchunu, you know, because he has a different posture, which we, from reading, it looks like it's very good. So, yeah, those are the things. It is quite, it's very bad. And we, I mean, some of the campaigns that we were running, even on community radio stations, you will laugh. I only know three languages in South Africa, right? And they will take me to a radio station. I don't know the language, but they would translate it for me as I speak in English. They'll translate and they'll explain to communities the network belongs to you. Wherein you see people that you do not know in your area, call this number. You know, you have a number on your phone that you can call. If you have a Vodacom, MTN, Telkom number, Rain number, these people are the people that will make sure that you do not have connectivity. Inform your South African police services that there are people that you do not know in your area. Mm-hmm. Especially there was a time, a week, wherein it started from PE, Qabeha, Grahamstown, Queenstown, somewhere in the Transkei region, going down, up until in KwaZulu-Natal. We looked at the map, we couldn't believe it. So obviously this is like the same people, but they're targeting areas along the road, but rural areas. And we're like, no, something's got to give. Let us try and do things differently. So it is a massive issue. And then the sad part is that most of the batteries are not even available for resale in South Africa.
And what happens to them?
They go across the border.
How do they get across the border? They just walk across.
I don't know how they I don't know how they go across, but there's no use for them in South Africa. You can't use them for anything.
Yeah. But can they be used across the border? And how?
I don't know. You never know. People are innovative. Here, no one can use them for anything. Even at a scrapyard, they have no value.
Right.
Yeah, within our context, and it's mostly we've seen, I think, Namibia, Zambia, and a bit of Zim is not as bad.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're still going to meet with the police minister, the new police minister?
Not me. I'm sure it will be Comrec.
Okay.
Yes, it will, because that's more law enforcement.
Okay.
They are the ones that deal with the risk of everything, and they understand the law enforcement issues, how they happen. Yes.
I was going to ask you what two or three things would you like to see from the police minister to try and fight the scourge? I mean, are there easy wins?
There are easy wins that we've identified. For starters, which we've seen even here in Gauteng, first, a partnership with the police, the network operators, and the communities themselves. Those things are work. We've seen them in Soshanguve, we've seen them in Soweto, including the Community Policing Forum. Those, we've seen their work. That relationship has to be strengthened, and you don't let go because there's a change of leadership, let's say within SEPs. And then SEPS itself has to ensure that the appropriate forms are completed, the proper statements are taken, so that National Prosecution Authority has a good case that they can take forward. So it's more about proactive, and also when that does not work, what is the next step? Mm-hmm. So those are the things that we have been working with, that to say, lead the charge, Comrade, because you know all the players there, and these are the things that are of importance.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to chat a bit about Spectrum.
Oh.
The MultiChoice and I think eMedia as well have both said, I forget where they said it, may have been in an ICASA process, but they said, hands off our spectrum, anything below 690, we've given up the digital dividend bands to the network operators, everything below 694, hands off is for broadcasting. I know there have been talks in other markets about potentially using some sub-694 spectrum for telecommunications. Does ACT have a view on this and how that spectrum should be allocated?
We know what happened at ITU, and so far as the spectrum. Our view is very clear. The future is digital, right? And if we all agree that the future is digital, and if we all agree that the future is video and anything that comes with it, meta universe and everything else, it goes without saying that then South Africa needs to have the conversation as to the spectrum should go to telcos. Right? And without bashing anyone, I say in the broadcasting space, but looking as to what the future looks like, because you've already seen, even from both of the companies you mentioned, they're already trying to move their services to become more digital, because one is losing subscriber, the other is losing viewers. So how do you support that moving forward? And I know that it takes long, I'll say it takes longer for our sectors to agree. Mm-hmm. I'll make that. And I mean, you may recall that we even had a discussion about something called digital audio broadcasting.
Yes.
That went out of nowhere, that there's always this idealism or romantic idea that we are going to come up with an alternative that is great. And in our experience, we've seen that South Africa, from a broadcasting landscape, the growth is moving, it's more digital. You've seen with SABC Plus, I mean, you wrote an article about it, I think last week or so, that everyone is moving there. So why do you say, I want to hold on? What is the rationale behind it? I still, for me, it just doesn't make sense.
Okay. Yeah. So more spectrum for the telcos.
Yes.
Okay.
But not at 14 billion.
Right. Okay.
No, those are not sustainable numbers.
I was going to ask, what do you want to see from the next spectrum auction?
I think for starters, we've learned our lessons. We've seen even with load shedding. And then we've seen that some of the, especially the last round, the pricing was so ridiculously high that currently, there are some that are still struggling in terms of seeing a return on investment on it. So ICASA has to go to the drawing board and say how to effectively price spectrum, not price it in a way that is saying how do we save the economy of South Africa.
Okay.
But to price it to make sure that there's sustainability and attract investment from a network operator point of view, so that South Africa in the long run survives, not short-term gains.
Is an auction the best way of licensing spectrum, high-demand spectrum, in your view, or should we go back to the beauty contest model?
For me, I think the auction still works, right?
But maybe not the high reserve prices.
The issue is that high reserve price. That's where the problem is. Mm. I think it works because it just actually shows you practically what is possible. And the beauty contest, I think ICASA has dabbled with it for a while. If you've seen, I think the last one they did was on the radio as in radio, I think, Northern Cape or something. That didn't attract any bidders that could make money out of it. And I think auction works, but just lower the reserve price. And make sure the barriers to entry are not as high as the last auction.
Okay. Yeah. There's been talk about spectrum trading in South Africa for many years now, but it never seems to happen. Do you think we should be moving quickly to introduce spectrum trading? And if so, why? If not, why not?
For me personally, mm-hmm. I believe that that one of the reasons that ACT has been established is due to gaps within the, I'll say, South African landscape, such as research. We've been having the conversation about spectrum trading since 2015, mm-hmm. if I'm not mistaken. I think 2015, just after the World Cup, Soccer World Cup.
Almost a decade.
Yes. And surely, without taking sides, you know what is the benefit for South Africa. As a regulator, you should know that this is the one area that is likely to benefit South African from a making sure that people are connected, making sure that the spectrum is efficiently used. So, you know, you've experimented with efficient pricing of the spectrum. Well done, right? Mm-hmm. And you've done it and you've executed it well. What about why are you not taking the lead in terms of spectrum trading and saying, these are the pros and cons. Do we think it will work in South Africa? And I think there is reluctance to do that, but I think it might be beneficial for South Africa to have spectrum trading. Because if I say now I was just licensed with spectrum, right? And I have, because I've paid so much money, right, for it, I cannot realize the return on the investment that I made. But you have the resources, right, to actually exploit. I know it's a bad word, but it's meant in the positive, to exploit that spectrum for the benefit of end users. And that is likely to generate more revenue, even from a fiscus, from an ICASA point of view, as I'm still figuring myself and trying to attract investors into my space. But now, because I don't think it's fair that when I cannot utilize the spectrum, I just return it to ICASA, right? Because I've paid for it, right? So there must be something that I'm able to get from us having that kind of a relationship. I think it's something that perhaps we needs more food for thought from regulators and us as researchers alike.
Right.
Yeah.
Why do you think there is that reluctance to tackle the issue?
I'm not sure, but I always think it's that thing of thinking that person that bought the spectrum, that got the spectrum the first time is likely to make more money. Mm-hmm. So as from a fiscus, I might make more money if it comes back to me. Oh. It just doesn't, there's no logical reason that I can find that I can say this is tangible. That's just me off the cuff at this point.
Okay. Yeah. It's not an ideological thing.
Yes.
Oh, it is an ideological thing. Okay.
Yeah.
Lastly, I want to chat to you about something that I had a long conversation with Shamil Jusup at Vodacom about this about probably last year sometime. And that's OTTs, as the telcos like to call them, streaming companies effectively, and this concept of fair share. Mm-hmm. Now, the operators are arguing that companies like Netflix need to pay something for the network operators to carry their huge volumes of traffic across their infrastructure. And I've never really understood this argument because Netflix is, well, the consumer is buying the bandwidth to watch the content that Netflix is providing. So someone is actually paying for that network connection. I'm guessing since you represent operators that you're on the side of this fair share proposal.
Yes, we actually wrote a paper. But I want to make it simple.
Take me through it.
No, but I want first to make it very simple because one of the cases that we followed, especially around Netflix was what happened in Singapore, right? And Singapore has been a very complex and interesting case because Singapore understood, though it's a very strange market, understood fair share before anyone else understood it, but understood it from a broadcasting point of view, ironically. Okay. So think about it this way. SABC, eMedia, MultiChoice, Power FM, whoever it is, in order for them to connect, in order for them to show their content to people to listen to them, they pay Sentech money.
Mm-hmm.
They pay a signal distributor, they pay a satellite provider, they pay whomever,
mm-hmm.
right? And
well, they pay a content delivery network in a data center.
Correct. They pay somebody.
Mm.
Netflix is based in Netherlands, right? Amongst the countries that based in Netherlands. They come in streaming into your car. They don't pay anything. They are, you as a South African, you are supposed to be paying your TV license to help SABC to be able to purchase the Sentech transmission cost. Then they say, this doesn't work. They must contribute something because the person, in order for you to have a handset to watch TV, you paid somebody, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why must somebody come in and waste space? And then same Singapore had a long case with Netflix and their telecom, I say their equivalent of telecom in the South African case context, wherein Netflix is required to interconnect. Like, you know, interconnection in our world
mm-hmm.
belongs in mobile to mobile, fixed to fix, that kind of mm-hmm. thing. To sign an interconnection agreement, they refused for years. Save for this year, they lost Netflix and they are compelled to...
They lost how? Through a court case, through policy?
Court cases.
Okay.
Court cases on appeals, cross appeals. And essentially it says interconnect and thou shalt pay the telco, a network operator, X amount, back pay it to year X. That is the extreme example.
Mm.
So now you go to countries like the US, certain states, EU, except the UK. I make that exception. Wherein they're saying, think about it, that you pay a fixed, in South Africa, you pay a fixed amount for, I say, to connect to your data.
Mm-hmm.
Say you have Wi-Fi connection at home, you have a fiber line here at the office, you pay a fixed amount with guaranteed speeds that your speeds will be X amount of speeds and at this particular point. And from a network point of planning, they have planned that this is how much you've consumed, this is how much you are likely to consume in the future, and let's say you have future children and grandchildren, this is how much you're likely to utilize. Now comes Netflix with all its conveniences, right? Netflix, you pay Netflix, I don't know, 200 and whatever rents. I don't know, my husband pays for these things.
$1.99, I think, yes, the ultimate package,
men,
yes.
Men always pay for these things. So you pay the amount that you pay Netflix,
yeah,
right? And that's it. Nothing else happens within the South African context. And then a network operator now has to adjust the quality of service for me and you to watch the Netflix at the quality that we were used to from watching any other, I say, video. And it's not Netflix alone, it's a number of them. And we are saying, one of the proposals that we're putting forward, fair share, they must assist in terms of building their networks. And government has a number of options that they can look at. They can even make them, because remember, there's an expectation that there must be high-speed internet in South Africa. How do they contribute towards the high-speed internet in South Africa from an infrastructure point of view to make sure that those areas, let's say, network operators are unable to go to in terms of connecting and building infrastructure, let's say 5G networks? Let's put a fund so that there's that infrastructure is built there so that we are able to roll out good services for everyone. It cannot be that when you have a problem of quality of service, you go, that network operator, again, it's not functioning. We must take a collective responsibility to make sure that even those people that are offering video, especially because those videos are high they consume a lot of bandwidth. Of course, it doesn't mean everyone will be contributing towards this fair share arrangement. So that's the one option that we're putting together, and we've put three options as to how the fair share arrangement should work.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give you the paper. I'm not going to give you the other ones.
So all right.
Our paper is finalized, but it is with the editors just to make sure that mm-hmm. it looks and reads correctly. It has the data that is required. And we will be launching it just to show this is what research shows. This is what our context in South Africa says. Government make policy and legislation that makes sure those that come in South Africa contribute towards ensuring that we have proper infrastructure, high-speed internet for everyone.
When can we expect this paper?
We were targeting the end of this. This is July, end of July.
End of this month. Okay.
End of this month.
Well, we'll look out for that and
we'll send it to you.
Give it good coverage on Tech Central, because I'm quite skeptical about this fair share proposal, I must say. So I look forward to reading the paper. I get the impression that what's happening is the content providers are effectively turning the telcos into low margin dumb pipes, which they don't want to become, and that's what this fight is about. But I look forward to reading the paper.
Not really. After this, I'll introduce you to somebody based in Pretoria that has done wonderful research within our South African context. He's based at UNISA.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That sounds great. Well, I look forward to reading that paper. There's so much more we can talk about, but we are out of time.
Thank you.
Nomvuyo Sobatsi is CEO of the Association for Comms and Technology, or ACT. For short, do you guys have a website?
We do have a website.
What is it?
Www.act4sa, as in word, F-O-R-S-A, mm-hmm. .co.za.
Act4sa.co.za.
Correct.
Great. Nomvuyo Sobatsi, thank you so much for coming into the Tech Central studio, and look forward to inviting you on the show again. There's plenty more to talk about, and I'm sure you're going to be having some very interesting conversations with the new politicians in the space in the coming weeks and months. I look forward to seeing how that progresses as well. So thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me, and thank you to your viewers and those that will be watching as well. Thank you.
Thank you.